Good afternoon. We're going to be looking now at Gender Paper 24C, which is a paper that takes another look at suggestions that we had for new projects through the gender consultation. But before we get into the paper, Kumar wanted to give you a report back from the last Interpretations Committee meeting with regards to one of the items that had featured in the paper that we looked at last month, regarding derecognition of modified financial assets, but which was not one of the projects which you asked us to bring back to look again this month.
Thanks, Michael. Afternoon, everybody. It shouldn't take long, hopefully. This is a request we received from the Interpretations Committee last week at their May meeting. At this meeting, the Interpretations Committee finalized their agenda decision on not to take on a project on modified financial derecognition of modified financial assets. Primarily being the reasons behind it, going back to past discussions, was the complexity and the fact that it would require an amendment of the standard and couldn't be done through an interpretation. Whilst finalizing the agenda decision, some Interpretation Committee members commented that this is an issue that they see in practice and can have there is diversity in practice. Consequently, they requested the staff to inform the board that when they consider new projects under the gender consultation, they should give this project due consideration to be of a high priority for them to consider under new projects. As Michael mentioned, in April 2016, this project was brought before the board as part of the new projects, and the board at that meeting decided not to give it a priority, and that was also the staff recommendation. Fundamentally, the reasons behind the staff recommendation was that we did not think that, given the current level of concern, it was that big for it to become a priority, whilst we acknowledge that there could be some diversity in practice. Also, the limited scope and the fact that we do not also think that any new information has come to light since the board last considered this project under IFRS 9, because it was a conscious decision not to add this to the IFRS 9 project, because derecognition had worked well. So that is where we stand, and we did promise the IFRIC that we will update the board, and that's what we are here to do. Happy to take any questions or...
No questions.
Okay. In that case, we'll turn to paper 24C now. And as I mentioned, these are the 10 projects that you asked for us to bring back to you, some of which with some further information associated with those. Now, I'd like to just take this in two pieces. First of all, I'd like to consider the first three suggested projects. The reason for this is that the first and second are ones which in paper 24A for tomorrow we are recommending that you do include on your agenda, and the third one having some links to the second one. So I'd like to start with those three. I'll just touch on them briefly and then ask if there's any questions or comments, and then we can move on to the other seven after that. So starting first of all with the IFRS reporting by subsidiaries, this is the suggestion or the observation that a lot of groups which report under IFRS for their consolidated financial statements have subsidiaries which are required to produce financial statements at the subsidiary level. Now, a lot of these subsidiaries would be companies that would qualify for the IFRS for SMEs in the context, in the sense that they are not publicly accountable entities. However, the observation that is made is that the barrier to them adopting the IFRS for SMEs is that they would need to adopt a different measurement basis, recognition measurement basis, compared with what they use for reporting to the parent for the consolidated financial statements. And so it's been observed that if these companies were able to continue to use the full recognition and measurement basis in full IFRS, and yet have some disclosures which were more aligned with the IFRS for SME sort of reduced disclosures, that this would allow some sort of cost savings to be achieved through the process while still maintaining the recognition measurement numbers that are needed for group reporting and would be meeting the sort of SME type disclosures that obviously the board has already identified as being satisfactory for SMEs to report in their financial statements. We think this is something that the initial research, if the board did decide to put this onto its agenda, would perhaps be worth following up first of all with some national standard setters who have introduced similar type of regimes at a national level, and obviously looking at what the disclosures are within the IFRS for SMEs to see what modifications might be necessary for the different recognition and measurement that goes with full IFRS. I've seen two cards up already, so maybe I should just sort of stop there and ask for comments, questions on this particular one before moving on to the next topic.
Yes.
Okay. And just as you were teeing this up, Michael, I had a mini aha moment linking this to a comment that I had on the separate financial statements project, and I want to make the link now when we're thinking about this. Presumably, in many cases, this first project would be for separate financial statements of subsidiaries. It isn't that it couldn't be group financial statements of subsidiaries, but presumably it would be separate.
I think, you know, a lot of times the subsidiaries will be preparing separate financial statements.
Okay. And the reason I had made the assumption that this will include a lot of separate financial statements, I thought in the description of the separate financial statements project, there was a very significant issue that wasn't identified, and I think it's equally applicable here, and so at least we'd have to include it in the research, and that is the question that we have faced in both pension disclosures by statements of subs and in group share-based payment arrangements, which is, when you're doing separate financial statements, should you regard the sub as a proportion of the group, and that, or do you regard it as a separate legal entity and look only at that entity's rights, obligations, etc.? And that can be a very, very different outcome for what you bring in and what you exclude from the reporting. And I think it would be equally applicable to, you know, this first project looks at, can we create something that makes it easier for subs to do IFRS financial statements if they're doing IFRS recognition and measurement? Presumably they're doing that for group purposes, but I think it's issues like, is your pension obligation as a sub, if your employees participate in the parent, is it a proportion of the parents, or is it what it would be if you were running your own pension plan? You know, and I think that's a very important and could be quite challenging to reach agreement on about what the objective of separate financial statements is. And I just want to point out it's relevant for this one too.
Okay. And, you know, I certainly see the point you're making. I think what we had in mind for the project that we are recommending is one that would really focus just on disclosures. The separate financial statements project, which we're not recommending, is one where there are questions about recognition and measurement. And so that's where I would see a distinction. Whilst I can see the population would be similar to both, there would be a distinction in terms of the work effort and the work focus that be included there. The particular point that you raise about group pension plans, I mean, we do already obviously have something in IAS 19 on that particular point.
I know the two that I raised are...
I have a few we're going to really into detail here.
Right. I don't want answers to those questions, I just want to point out that I think that question is relevant and should be included in the research for this one to decide whether or not we have to answer it to do this project.
Gary?
Actually, I like this particular project in here, I think, is a preparer. The more stuff, you know, that it's done at the subsidiary level that also feeds the parent that can be used for local purposes, say standalone financial statements, that's a big time saver. So I would support it. Basically, it's, like you say, it's full IFRS with the miniature disclosures, the SME disclosure regime. But I do agree with Mary. I think it's going to be hard to truly separate from the general principles of separate financial statements. But the big thing there, it's the related party transactions. It's the absence of independent existence and stuff. And I would not, if, I guess I heard you say you weren't thinking of going there, but if you did, I think this is a bigger project than you think. If you're going to try to, hey, what would this look like if it was an independent company and fair value and related party and, you know, the common interest transactions, it's a bigger deal. But anyways.
When I saw this, I thought, could this also not be a solution for the European request?
I was just about to talk to you there. So.
But I think that's different, because that's, I think what we're talking about here is where the subsidiary qualifies as an SME in its own right, although it might belong to a larger group, which is
I think the regime might.
I think the really important thing there is the first line of your paragraph six. Mm-hmm. So there are two ways to look at this. The one way to look at this is that we are taking IFRS compliant companies and giving them relief from disclosures, or alternatively, we're taking IFRS for SME companies and allowing them to use the advanced recognition. And my understanding of what we're trying to aim at here is the second one. Yeah. We're taking IFRS for SME companies and allowing them. I think what the European Union is likely looking for is the opposite. And I think that is an important clarification in thinking about companies. And the reason why I'd say this is...
Will the end result be the same?
The problem would be that when we write the disclosures for IFRS for SMEs, we write those disclosures for companies that are not publicly listed.
Yeah, I know.
And that means that applying these disclosures, as we now phrase them here, to listed companies means we have to think differently about the disclosures again.
Yeah.
And I think that then has the knock-on effect kind of downhill, if you like.
Amaro?
Very objectively, I think Daryl touched the point that I think we should be very careful with this project, because and be more clear, is either allowing SMEs to upgrade in terms of recognition and measurement, or what is dangerous is permitting the ones that are full IFRS today to have less disclosure. This second option can really jeopardize IFRS adoption in some regions. And specifically because the assertion that you have in paragraph 6 that typically these subsidiaries would meet the definition of a small medium size, that does not apply, for instance, in Brazil, where IFRS, full IFRS, is required for every company. And there are a number that are not SMEs. So the moment we indicate that we have a project allowing recognition measurement that's full IFRS but less disclosure, I guess they will go straight for this second option and we'll have three levels of IFRS. And this can be a source of pressure to the disclosure, to the level of disclosure that we have in full IFRS. Just a warning.
Actually, an interesting example is Australia, where they didn't take up SMEs, but they took up a reduced disclosure for SMEs. So they stayed with recognition and measurement for everybody the same.
Exactly.
John Gould.
Thank you. Before going to the next topic, what I'd like to know is how we are going to process and how we are going to select some of these projects to maybe to do something, but some others we are maybe postponing some quite long time.
But the answer to that question is paper 24A, which we'll be discussing tomorrow.
Okay.
Yes, and that has the proposals in.
But however, based on your analysis, very good analysis here, the first topic, subsidiaries case, in the paragraph 9, if the board wishes to pursue this approach, then we recommend beginning with some kind of initiative.
on this issue, you suggest a kind of initial research. However, if we go to the other copy, for example, the review of IAS 20 or some non-reciprocal transactions, you said nothing, or you said kind of, you suggest some kind of not to do anymore. However, what I'm saying is that if you are giving a kind of different evaluation of different subjects of projects here in among 10 plus 1, 11 projects, but in the case of non-reciprocal transactions and IAS 20, are quite popular topic in among emerging economic groups. So last month when Ian was there, they strongly, you know, suggested that this is a very important and urgent issue. So they would like to tackle this kind of issue. So I'm just saying, before going to the details of the each standard, what they are both, maybe tomorrow we'll discuss this issue, but do you have a variable payment, maybe some kind of thing might be?
Yes, and the first two projects out of these 10 are the ones that we're recommending the board add to its agenda when resources permit. But the other 8, we're not recommending are added to the agenda, but with one caveat, which I will come on to in a moment.
But isn't the purpose of this today's discussion to get all the reasons, the pros and cons before the board members?
That's right.
So that tomorrow, when we actually look at them relative to each other, you have all the information already.
Just a background, so that we have to set
quickly move to the other 9.
So if we turn to a second one, which is the variable and contingent consideration for asset purchases, this is an issue which I know we've brought to you before because it's an issue that's been discussed a lot by the Interpretations Committee, and one where, notwithstanding the considerable discussions that they've had, they've been unable to reach consensus on how this issue should be accounted for under existing standards. And so they concluded, and in fact their March 2016 agenda decision concluded that they felt the board should address the accounting for variable payments comprehensively. And as I say, we are recommending that this is something that should be added to the board's agenda as resources permit. Now, I did say I wanted to just link it briefly with the third issue, which was the risk sharing. Whilst the variable payment for asset purchases has a degree of sort of variability in the payments that are made, and a lot of that is often to do with the sharing of risks or to do with uncertainty, perhaps in the value of the asset, or in sort of the financing of the asset, you get a lot of those similar issues coming through in the risk sharing. But the risk sharing collaborative arrangements is one where we're not talking about a single asset, but perhaps it's a group of activities that two or more parties are going to participate in jointly, but not necessarily through a joint arrangement. And where there are similar issues as for the first one, but as I say, it's a broader issue. And our analysis on this, our thinking on this, is that it would be better to look at the narrower scope topic first and develop the required guidance or requirements for that. And then perhaps having done that, could look at, well, has the solutions that the board could develop on the first issue, the variable payments, actually help or go a long way to helping on the risk sharing collaborative arrangements.
If we look at this, will we look across to contingent consideration and business combinations and think about why we would or wouldn't get to the same position?
I think that's a logical thing to do. You might even say it'd be a logical starting point for the accounting, given that we've got a very similar situation there and we've got established accounting which is well understood. Just with regards to the remaining seven projects, because these are ones which we're not recommending to be added to the agenda, I didn't want to go into detail one by one on these. The one that I did want to highlight, though, was the item to do with the assessment of the need to withdraw IS 26, which is in paragraphs 25 and 26. The reason I highlight that is that we think this is something that the staff could do some background work on through following up with the IFAS group to find out the extent to which IS 26 is used currently and what they would see as being the consequences if the board was to propose withdrawing that standard. And then we could bring the results of that work back to you for you to then decide whether you wanted to add that project onto your agenda at that stage. But we think that's quite a sort of a self-contained piece of work that could be done through IFAS outreach initially before deciding to add a project to your agenda. The other items, you know, we've explained in here why we wouldn't be recommending them to be added to the agenda. Happy to take any questions or hear any comments about any of those as well.
I'm just going to challenge you on the one about IS 26. Just in terms of how we characterize that, if we followed your suggestion, you said we wouldn't be adding it to the agenda, but the staff would actually be doing what was described in here, which sounds awfully like adding it to our agenda because research projects are mostly staff work.
Fair enough. But I suppose it's sort of the nature of the work is at such a level that it, I didn't see it as comparable with the typical sort of even preliminary research that we would do.
And if the outcome is we do something, the something is pretty simple
but,
as well.
But that's always the case with any research project.
I had two comments. One on non-reciprocal transactions. IPSASB have done a lot of work on that and have drawn up a standard, I think. Not that I'm saying it should go on our agenda, but if we were to do any work, I would hope that we could use most of what they've already done, so it's just an additional fact. And likewise with government grants, we had at the Emerging Economies Group a couple of weeks ago, we had a whole day on government grants.
Really?
Yeah, which actually I thought it'd go slowly, and we filled in 8 hours. No trouble, it's amazing. Very good papers produced by the Russians, and they've got real life problems with government grants, you know. So, for instance, they want to improve lending to small businesses. So I'll make up the figures, but the government will say if you lend to the small businesses at 5%, we'll lend to you at 2.5% in equivalent amount. So the amount they get from the government is a grant, the difference between the real interest rate and the interest rate they're being charged. How do you handle that and match it with the loans you're making out to the SMEs, et cetera, et cetera? And then another point that came up, which I thought was quite interesting towards the end of the day, is why are we only talking about government grants? Why not grants in general? Because organisations or entities get grants from all over the place. It's the same sort of transaction. So again, I'm not necessarily... the Russians would be, and quite a few of the emerging economies would be quite keen to see it on the agenda. And there are real life problems now occurring because of the standard. The standard allows alternative approaches, and some of them are very, not just counterintuitive, I think, but wrong.
Thank you. I disagree with staff's proposal about IS-8 hierarchy. I think we should do some research, because it had a function before, but now 15 years has passed, and then IFRS is widely accepted, and this paragraph 12 is redundant. And moreover, we are going to change our conceptual framework. So I'm confused, what does the similar conceptual framework means? So is IFRS conceptual framework and the US GAAP conceptual framework similar or different? Or is there any other conceptual framework in the world other than IFRS and US GAAP? And those are not very clear. And also, I think there is a fundamental contradiction in this paragraph 12, because the conceptual framework itself does not restrict the standard. So standard can deviate from the conceptual framework anyway. So then what is the point to allow the pronouncement of other accounting standards, the pronouncement, I mean, which could be deviated from the conceptual framework. So to ask for the similar conceptual framework doesn't mean anything, because standard could be, pronouncement could be deviated from the conceptual framework. So, and also, if we keep this paragraph, I think it could be abused both by the auditors and the preparers. Preparer can find some literature from the US GAAP or some other accounting standard whenever they cannot find it in the IFRS, and auditor could do the same. And eventually it would be treated like a cherry picking way. They pick up something from others. So I think it is high time for us to revisit this and discuss what we should do.
Mary?
I just wanted to ask what the staff's consideration was of IAS 20, review of IAS 20, in respect of the project on emission rights, etc., and whether you think that we can make a decision about IAS 20 independent of our decision about emission rights. In other words, can we go ahead, if we decide we want to go ahead with emission rights, could we do that without also doing IAS 20 or not? I'm not arguing for or against either one. I just want to know what consideration there was about the interaction or not of those two.
I mean, emission rights, you've obviously already had a paper on that in the context of the agenda consultation. Yes, last month that would have been. I must admit, I don't know the full content of that, so I can't speak.
It just struck me today, which is why I didn't think to read it sooner. That might be a scramble to think about that.
I mean, obviously, with you know, any standard that the board decides to develop, then there could be similarities between that project and an existing standard, which the board would, you know, give some consideration to, but isn't restricted by.
But to date, the emission rights project has said one of the things we have to wrestle with is the interaction with IAS 20, and you know, maybe we could restrict the options. But what I'm saying is I think there's interaction that we haven't thought through.
Okay.